If you gathered a bunch of historians, religious or not, they would agree that there once walked a man named Jesus, a real guy. He lived in Galilee, was killed by Romans, and his followers carried on after his death. But 2,000 plus years later, those are the only facts they could all agree on. But for a person as consequential as Jesus, how do we fill in the rest? And what does that picture say about ourselves? So prepare yourself for some serious questions and some not so serious questions. Like,
if Jesus had a favorite season, what would it be?
Of course it would be winter. That's his birthday. Of course it's going to be winter.
My name is Javi Zubizarreta, and welcome to Jesus's Favorite Podcast, a show where we explore the many ways we can understand one of the most important figures in history. Throughout the American Civil Rights Movement, preachers, pastors, and people of all walks of faith have served as vital leaders in the march towards justice. From Dr. King to William Barber, civil rights leaders have been inspired by Jesus' life and teachings. To dive deeper into the connection between Jesus and the civil rights movement, we wanted to talk to a contemporary member of the movement and learn more about how Jesus' life pushes them forward. As a young woman, Alexia Dukes has been involved with a variety of work with the NAACP. She's worked on a number of projects around civil rights, voter activation, and more. Alexia Dukes, thanks so much for joining us today on Jesus's Favorite Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to be with you. So you work with the NAACP, which has a long and storied history in this country. But for our younger audience, could you tell us a little bit about what the NAACP is and what it's done through the years and today?
So the NAACP was founded February the 12th, 1909. So we are almost 115 years old as of going to be February the 12th. So it's more of a social action, voter registrations, things like that, looking out for the people of color in the United States and beyond.
And can you tell us a little bit about the work that you've done for the organization through the years?
As any person, I started off in NAACP as a young 15-year-old. So I started off in a youth council, then moved on to be as a board member for the board of directors for the NAACP.
My goodness, that's incredible. What sort of work have you done through the years from 15 onward?
I would definitely say voter registration was the big key, as well as just getting our youth out and activated, get them to vote at an early age of 18.
You know, I think when we think of civil rights movements, we can often think of sort of major historical markers, right? Specific marches, specific speeches, and ignore the day-to-day work that goes into that, the organizing, the preparing. Could you speak a little bit about what that day-to-day work looks like, what it takes to make a movement grow, make an organization function?
If it's not meeting monthly or weekly, it's just getting people acclimated to these are our next steps in this movement. We want to make sure everyone is aware of what we're doing.
What first brought you at the age of 15 to the organization?
I am from St. Louis, Missouri. I am literally a mile from Ferguson. So on August 9th, Mike Brown was killed by a police officer. That acclimated me to become like really aware of it, of the injustices that Black people face. And I wanted to get involved with the NAACP. So I reached out to my local chapter and got more involved with it.
Could you speak a little bit more maybe of on that tragic day? Where did your mind go? Where did your heart go? What did it trigger in you that spurred you to action?
I remember that day. So on August 9th, I was just going through social media and I saw that somebody was killed about a mile or two away from me. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And then once I heard more of the story and people out on the streets marching and protesting, I said, this definitely, we hear it constantly of Black people being killed by police. This one just kind of struck me different. I don't know if it was because it was so close to home to me. Or I don't even know, but I just said this has to stop because we repeat the cycles. I've noticed I'm a big history buff. So we're repeating our cycles over and over again. So I kind of wanted to be on that forefront to kind of stop the cycle from occurring over and over again, because I want my kids to be safe walking down the street, driving in the car and things like that. I want them to be safe. So I want this to be better for the next generation to come.
Absolutely. We've got some rapid fire questions for you here. This is a podcast about Jesus, about imagining him as a person, as more than that. So there's no right or wrong answer here, just to sort of spur the imagination. So if Jesus had a favorite ice cream flavor, what would it be?
I would say chocolate ice cream.
Everyone goes with vanilla. You're the first to say chocolate. That's right. If Jesus had a favorite movie, what would it be?
A good coming of age movie, bringing people together type of thing. Loving on each other, just being there for people.
Okay. If Jesus had a favorite season, what would it be?
Of course it would be winter. That's his birthday. Of course it's going to be winter.
Okay. Would Jesus be a dog person, cat person, or a plant person?
I'm going to say Jesus loves all animals.
If Jesus came to your house, what would you offer him to drink?
I would offer Jesus, of course, water. I will let him choose his preference. Let's say that. I will let Jesus choose his preference.
Fair enough. What would Jesus's coffee order be?
Let me say this. I'm going to hope Jesus likes what I like. So I would give him a vanilla chai tea latte.
Okay. Fair enough. Would Jesus be an Apple or Android user?
I would definitely say Jesus would have two cell phones.
Jesus would be very tech savvy in your mind, is what you're saying.
Yes, he has to be.
All right. And then finally, in one word, who is Jesus to you?
Oh, wow. A protector, someone I can talk to on a regular basis. As a young age, my parents instilled in me like, hey, you need to pray. Then you just need to pray about any situation that you're going through, whether it be happy, sad, or just in the between moments. So I will definitely say Jesus is like my lifeline of all things, just like my lifeline to get me through the day. Like if there's a tough project, I send a little prayer up. If somebody is sick that I'm close to, I send a little prayer up as well. And I definitely say he answers my prayers, because those are like one-on-one conversations. I'm not really a person that likes to tell people like what I'm going through or what I'm praying for. It's just the me and him conversation. So I've seen his work. Sure. Come into fruition. So yeah.
That's great. That's great. You know, diving into your faith background a little bit, the civil rights movement in America has a strong intersection with Black churches. You know, obviously Dr. Martin Luther King was Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. How has your faith intersected with your work for civil rights?
As I was always reading, I always thought Jesus was a protester. So Jesus wanted the best for everyone. He did not want anybody to feel left out or excluded. He wanted everybody to come together. So that is the biggest piece that I think I can come with when it comes down to being an activist and things like that, is we've always learned that Jesus was supporting those that were disadvantaged. He was making people aware of the people that were disadvantaged. What are the game plans? What are the plans to do to make this to where everybody is on equal playing field?
Growing up, have there been moments of being in church with family talking about faith that message has come clear of Jesus's protester?
Yes, I will say that as I'm talking about it, it's when we're in church, the minister is preaching of Jesus loves everyone, no matter their circumstances, their social economic status, the race, anything. Jesus loves everybody, and we should all love one another and become a beloved community. So that's definitely what I would say, is we were taught that in church. And I will also say that my parents kind of instilled that, hey, you should love everybody no matter what.
For sure. In your day-to-day work, how do you bring that message or that lesson into the work?
I try to love everyone no matter their circumstances, because you can brighten up somebody's day or you can down their day. I want to be the person that brightens up people's days when it's with a smile or if it's a hello. I definitely want to be that person to be like, I've gotten good energy from her. I've gotten nothing but the best from her.
So diving into your work a little bit, as I understand it, reading through your bio, you've gone through quite a bit of training on cultural diversity, equality, and inclusion. Could you tell me a little bit about what that work entails?
And the work that I continue to do outside of my day-to-day is making sure everybody has equal opportunity, whether it's in talking, even everybody, which I mean, like generationally. Sometimes when we're talking generationally, a lot of times the older generation will stand up and speak up. Opening that door for younger generations, even though I'm like 20 some years old, I kind of want those teenagers to get up there and have those conversations. Because again, even though it's probably like a decade in between us or a couple of years, they have so much more to offer to the community. And sometimes seeing that same face over and over again does not really help the situation. Seeing bringing those new faces up front kind of helps us to kind of be like, okay, if we're seeing this younger face, this is happening to the same generation, like the generation before us.
It strikes me, you know, you talked about doing a lot of work in voter registration, as you said just now, bringing in young voices. It's a massive challenge, right, to get young people engaged in the work of politics, the work of activism, to get them to care, right? Because it can feel like in the face of events like, you know, police brutality and violence against one's community, that nothing matters or that nothing can make a change. How do you talk to young people about how they can impact the world around them?
As my parents told me growing up, or people around me, that people are always watching you. And I feel that through my actions and the way that I communicate and things like that, that's a prime example of how I can mentor them towards what they're trying to do, as well as asking questions is definitely the key part of that, is to be more informed and to do our own research. Because a lot of times when we're in the work of civil rights and social justice, we have to be well informed to do those things. So you don't want to be out there just saying anything. You need the actual proper research to do it and say those things up front.
Do you get pushback or people saying like, ah, it's not for me, this work, or it's not going to make any difference?
So I will say in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, it's free for all. When it comes down to the younger generation with voter registration and things like that, I remember a moment where I was like promoting, like, hey, we need you all to get outside and vote. And one of my Facebook friends was like, hey, I understand what you're doing, but it's not really impacting me and things like that. And I kind of think we saw that in the last election cycle of where we kind of changed the narrative in those states where it was like not the greatest of areas, but we kind of changed the persuasion or perspective of it.
I think we should jump into some more rapid fire questions. You spoke to this a little bit, but if Jesus were alive today, would he be an activist?
Yes, definitely he would be an activist. I think in the world today with all that's going on, he would definitely be on the forefront of it.
If Jesus were at a protest, what would his sign say?
Let's become a beloved community.
If Jesus, as you say, was an activist, what would his main strategy of activism be?
His main source of activism would be out there in the streets, actually sitting, talking to people. If it's walking down the street, I think he would talk to everyone. He could talk to the homeless. He would talk to just a CEO coming down the street. He would talk to anybody just to figure out what are the issues, and including everybody in a conversation, not just him doing the strategy work, but including everybody to come up with their own strategies.
And then finally, in this section, if Jesus had a favorite protest song, what would it be?
I won't know if Jesus would have a favorite protest song. I think Jesus would be a fan of them. It's just so many I would not choose.
Gotcha. Do you have a favorite?
I do have a favorite chant. Let's say that. And I learned it during my high school years. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains. So that's like my favorite chant of all time.
It's a pretty powerful one. For sure. When you think of Jesus, when you imagine him, who is the person that you imagine in front of you there?
I see Jesus in everybody, but I definitely say if I was actually looking at a person, he would probably be a little taller than me. He would look like me, but I also think we see Jesus every day.
Yeah.
And whether it's in a plant, it's in other people.
from your moment of sort of entering into this work, how have you stayed motivated? Because certainly we have seen other incidents, other shootings, other murders. How have you stayed motivated in this work?
As I tell people, if you see an injustice, always do something to kind of speak out for your voice, speak out in your own voice. So if that means if you're a social media person, a social media person that puts out stuff that be like, hey, this is not right, be that person. If you want to be out in the street, actually like protest it, be that person. There are different ways for people to put up front of what is going on in their communities. If it's, hey, it's something could be new. Like if it's creating a YouTube channel talking about the injustices that we're facing. And then these are the steps that we can possibly do. Going on Twitter again, or going on, well, Twitter's not really my friend anymore, but if it's going on Threads, if it's going on Instagram, if it's going on Facebook, I see a lot of people, if they can't get out at all, they're posting. And that's the thing that I'm seeing more and more is the Facebook posts saying like, hey, you're not saying anything. I need you to say something.
Sure.
Even if it's making a post about it. And a lot of times I think when we're in these situations, like new things come up, we have to actually do our research on different topics to kind of see like what's really going on. Let's dig deeper. Cause this things have been going on like since the beginning of time. Like if we don't know the history of it, how can we really speak about it?
You've talked about how your faith has inspired you as a Christian person. What would your hope be as we move forward in the fight for racial justice, for Christians and people who believe in Jesus to do more of, or to maybe do less of in this fight?
I will definitely say some of us in this Christian religion, we need to stop looking down on people. Because in the instant of a second, we can be in that same situation. I think that's where my psychology comes into play more than anything, is to actually, everybody has a story. It's a reason why people act the way they act. It's a reason why they're in this situation. So actually listening to them and just not interjecting your feelings into the situation, let them have that breathing room for 1 or 2 minutes to actually have those conversations of this is what I'm going through. This is what I'm processing. And then you not interjecting and you telling your story. That's the key thing that I will definitely say I've noticed over the years is a lot of times we look down on people in situations like this. And to be frank, our churches were the forefronts of the civil rights movements and things like that. So they noticed the injustices.
Sure.
I think the church has kind of changed their perspective on things.
How so?
I would say that we kind of strayed away from being out on the forefront of the movement. We've kind of hidden behind a closed door of it and not being as actively into the movement of seeing people that are oppressed. I think we're starting to come back to it. But for a while there, we were kind of separated. And I think Henry Louis Gates talks about it in a Black Church PBS documentary I watched a couple of years ago during COVID, where we were kind of like the front of it. And we were starting to kind of lose that in about the 70s or 80s. We kind of were, I'm not going to say this, but we were kind of more money driven.
Sure.
But we're slowly coming back.
Yeah. I think that's such an important fact to call out of how for so many years, church leaders and church officials weren't afraid to be out there, to be at the forefront. That takes courage, right? For anybody. But do you think that to be a Christian is to be brave?
Yes. I think being wherever you are in your life is to be brave. Bravery, like I said, there's different types of bravery in this situation. If it's cooking for the homeless, if it's just saying a prayer. Like I said, bravery is definitely different for different people. If that means, like, I'm an introvert at heart, that means me actually vocalizing what I'm truly and authentically feeling and actually speaking out for it, that's my bravery.
I want to talk a little bit about your background in psychology. As I understand, it was your undergrad, right?
Yes.
What has that background taught you and given you in this work?
Those Facebook posts are kind of accurate when they talk about, you know, I want to feel for people, but I have a deeper meaning of what you're trying to say. There's a deeper moment, whether it be trauma, whether it be your upbringing, whether it be just things in your life that made you feel this way.
That's great. All right. I've got some final rapid fire questions here for you. All right. Do you think Jesus would join a fraternity? And if so, which one?
Okay. So I would not say Jesus would join a fraternity. I think he would be honorary members of fraternities.
Okay.
But I definitely say Jesus would not probably be part of a fraternity.
Okay. Would he take part in any social activities and so
definitely.
Forth?
Definitely. Again, just because people are in fraternities or sororities, people still need Jesus or whatever person you worship. They still need those sources.
All right. If you could ask Jesus one question, what would it be?
What does the future look like? Whether it be me personally, whether it be me out here doing the work for social justice, like what will it look like in the next few years? Will there be more loving? Will there be more caring? Or will there be more hate? Or will there be more division? I kind of always want to kind of see what the future holds, because I'm a person that I wouldn't say that I don't like conflict, because sometimes you have to get to conflict in order to resolve it. Mm-hmm. But I don't like the division piece of it. But definitely, what's bringing us? Are we going to be together one day? Like, or is the world going to be more empathetic? I think we're losing that too, is people are losing more empathy when it comes down to things. So people on the street you just walk past are people that are struggling with their homes or our bills. We just be like, oh, okay, and keep it going.
Sure.
We just don't, I just feel like we don't acknowledge it anymore. Like, this person is struggling. How can I be of assistance or be of service to you during this time that you're going through?
If Jesus looked at you, how would you describe his look?
Jesus would have a mixture of everyone in them. Let's say that. And Jesus would have, I feel like Jesus would have brown hair, black hair. He would probably have an afro. I feel like Jesus would also be in regular clothing, because if he's in the all white clothing, he lets people know who he is. Mm. So Jesus, I think Jesus would be in disguise if he was coming out to the real world, let's say, because he would really want to know how you really treat people
in
this day and age. Because if you come in with the white clothing and all of this, people are prepared to be like, oh, that's Jesus. Let me act right. I'm like,
sure. If there's light shining around him, yeah, you're going to be on your best behavior.
Exactly. And I believe that Jesus puts people in our lives for a reason. And he kind of shines his light through people to be of assistance to us during different moments of our lives or different seasons of our lives. And we just don't realize it.
Where is Jesus most real for you?
Jesus is the most real to me, I would have to say, outside of the church. Our younger generation during COVID has experienced Jesus outside of the church, whether it be us going through our different moments in lives, whether it be depression or things like that. Jesus has showed his face to us that we might not necessarily have received in church, for instance. Because my friends and I have that conversation all the time, is we experience Jesus outside of church, not necessarily in church. I believe the church is there to kind of help and guide us along the journey.
Final question. If Jesus had a favorite podcast, what would it be?
Jesus would probably listen to this podcast. That would be my number one answer. But Jesus, well, I think we'll listen to a plethora of podcasts, sure, just to know what's going on with the world today. I definitely would believe it'll be a plethora of podcasts.
Alexia, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You take care.
To learn more about Alexia Dukes and her work, you can find her on LinkedIn as Alexia R. Dukes.
This episode of Jesus' Favorite Podcast was hosted by Javi Zubizarreta and produced by me, Ebony Moxie. Senior producer, Josh Long. Grotto Network is Adrian Giraldi, social media manager. Becky Rogers, art director. Kara Kenujeski, project manager. Ebony Moxie, audio storytelling associate. Jackie Cho, platform storytelling associate. Jane O'Connor, associate video producer. Javi Zubizarreta, director. Jesse McCartney, senior content editor. Josh Long, senior video producer. Kevin DeClute, video producer. Michaela Douglas, digital content strategist. Mike Rossetti, senior manager for community engagement. Father Brendan McClare, associate producer. Ryan Brossard, student media assistant. Special thanks to our guests and Notre Dame Studios. Did you like what you heard today? Please share Jesus' Favorite Podcast with a friend. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Instagram at Grotto Network.
In light of Alexia's work in civil rights, we wanted to leave you with a portion of a speech from former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, given in 1988 to the National Bar Association in Washington, D.C. Audio of Thurgood Marshall's speech, courtesy of C-SPAN, and now this.
Stop talking about how far we've come and start talking about how close we are. I repeatedly tell young people, you're better off than before. And be patient and things will get better. And the thing that gets me now is not only telling me that's what you told my father, they say that is what you told my grandfather and things are no better for me. It's admitted in the Times, New York Times reports or Time Magazine that a recent survey shows that racism is broader and stronger than before. We're not gaining ground, my friends. We might be losing. But one thing I'm sure of, this is no time to stop.